Shazami is the latest and best enterprise-grade recruitment website technology globally, and is fully integrated into your ATS. There are no lock-in contracts, as we believe constantly high service levels and cutting-edge, easy-to-use technology should make you never want to leave. Recruitment website success equals Shazami. Visit shazami.com for more information.
What great ideas are so close within your grasp? Seeing other points of view, anticipating change, considering multiple possible turnouts, acknowledging uncertainty, searching for compromise. We're going to talk about how to get over those limiters of innovation so that you can extract better thinking from yourself and your team. So let's talk about how to win the future.
Welcome to the Marketing Rules podcast from Thinking Circles with me, your host, James Whitelock. Recfest has become one of the tentpole events in the talent attraction events calendar. But how did it start, and what were the drivers to make it distinctly different from many other events on the calendar? In December 2023, I interviewed Recfest head honcho Jamie Leonard. We discussed the origins of Recfest, the facelifts it has had over the past few years, and the future of recruitment-focused events. Welcome back, everybody, to the Marketing Rules podcast. And I'm brilliant to welcome on board Jamie Leonard from Recfest fame and all kinds of other kind of great kind of ventures. Jamie, it's a pleasure to have you on the podcast today. For anyone who's kind of never heard of you, where have they been? They've obviously been under a rock. But maybe you could give us a little bit about your kind of background and what you do now.
Yeah, sure. So thank you, James. Good to be here. Jamie Leonard. The recruitment events company has two major brands that people might be aware of. Recfest, which in the UK is the largest event in the world for talent acquisition, just launched in the US. And then we have the Resource and Leader 100, which is our peer leadership network, predominantly Europe, recently launched in the Middle East as well. And in terms of my background, I've been to a few places, worked at a few job boards in my time, used to run some really small events. Actually, you attended a few times, if I remember.
I believe so.
In Farringdon, the speed network and stuff. So did that for a few years and landed with a recruitment events company, partnering with my wife and business partner.
I mean, it's a pretty kind of interesting background, because it's, you know, for the last kind of, I don't know, 10, 15, maybe more, it's solidly events, right? And most people you find who are in kind of recruitment events don't kind of either last that long or kind of dip in and out, or just can't, you know what I mean? So, you know, you're one of the only people that I can think of that has kind of got a solid background in recruitment events. And, you know, there's no one else, I don't think, who's kind of, you know, doing what you do.
I don't believe so. I think maybe the in-house recruitment guys have probably been doing it for a similar length of time. But no, we started off many, many years ago with a real basic format, the speed meeting format, which was pretty unique at the time. Yeah, as I said before, the recruitment events at the time were not fantastic within our space in terms of some of the conferences that were available. They all followed a very similar format that was pretty archaic now when you look at it. You know, it was very much around speaker on stage talking to a big room of people, generally in a really beige surrounding some sort of conference center. And the content was regurgitated. There wasn't much interaction there at all. There was very little onus put on the audience themselves and their own development. Very, very geared towards sponsors, as far as I remember. So we thought we'd do something different. And we launched with a speed networking program, which lasted for about 4 or 5 years. It was a great little way to kick off. It was different. It had a low barrier to entry, so we didn't have to put a lot of investment into it. Yeah, it was myself and my wife starting out from day one, so we didn't have any investment at all. But it allowed us to build up a really good audience. And as I say, I remember, you know, you've been at a few of them, some of the ones down in Farringdon. And, you know, we'd had like 15, 20 TA people at every event. And we looked at something like CIPD. And I remember some of the people who worked for us saying, wow, you know, we're never going to be at that level. And we had a mentality which was, let's just win one fan at a time. With every event, if we can grab one person that is a fan all of a sudden, at 15, then we can build on that. And that's pretty much what we've done for the last 11, 12 years is, you know, from every small event to large events we do, how can we start to win fans and bring them into, you know, an advocacy piece that allows us to amplify the volume of the events. In terms of sort of being here, you know, consistently for, you know, probably 12 years, Most people don't, because it's not easy. You know, events are a very, very difficult industry, especially during the pandemic. It wasn't easy to be an event company within the recruitment space. You know, on both sides, you're getting hammered. On one side, no one's doing any hiring. On the other side, you can't actually gather people together. So that was really difficult to go through that. And you can see why a lot of companies, a lot of people have opted to go and do St. Kells, because that was 3 years of real grind.
Yeah. So let's kind of travel back in time. There must have been a point where those kind of speed dating style scenarios moved into, and you started thinking about something bigger, and you got to kind of Wreckfest, right? What was that? What was that kind of process like?
So that process was sparked by a conversation in the bar, which most great ideas are. But unfortunately, the conversation wasn't with myself. So someone from one of our events was stood in the bar next to us after the event. And, you know, you know what it's like. Sometimes if someone's having a conversation you want to listen to, your ear just naturally goes over to that conversation. And they were talking about the event on the day. And one of the people there said, you know, it's a nice little event, but this company is never going to be a big event company. They'll just forever do their small events, and they won't compete with the CIPDs of this world and the other big events. And anyone that knows me will know I don't particularly like being told what I can't do. And that for me was the red flag. That was the onus. That was the rocket to say, well, we need, you know, oh, let's go and try something bigger. Let's give the industry something that they don't have right now. And, you know, I've always been a big, big festival fan. And for me, a festival is about the music, but it's more about the connection with people you get there. It's about creating a kind of a utopia universe. It's not real. It's just a space and time where, you know, people can be their best selves and live their best lives. And I kind of looked at it and looked at the event space that we had right then and said, well, you know, yes, the speakers are important, but where's the connection piece? Where's the bit that really makes people want to come to this event, as opposed to be told they have to, or, hey, I'm doing it to get out of the office because, you know, I don't want to be on a Friday afternoon. So we looked at the festival format. We looked at what we could take away from the festival format and started to build Wreckfest. So it was more about the connective piece between the users, the delegates, and there was a lot more onus put on the conversational piece. Yes, the speakers were great, and, you know, all the bands, they would be in the festival, but there has to be more put on the actual people themselves. And we went out with our first event in 2014. And it was down in East London. And if I'm being honest, it was more of a conference with green carpet conference called AstroTurf on the floor.
Yes.
And it was okay. It was fine. 100 people, yeah. You know, so what? We stayed committed to it, though, because there was something there. It was unique. It was different. And not everyone loved it as well. This is the other point. Like, probably 70% of the audience were like, yeah, it was cool. 30% was, we don't like this format. But we had enough advocates there. We had enough fans to build on. So next year we went to 200. And then, okay, we're at 200. That's great. And, you know, we moved it to the HMS president on the Thames. So still a little bit funky, still a little bit different. In fact, that was the day of the largest travel strike in the UK. So no buses, no trains, no tubes. And here's us. We're bootstrapping our biggest event ever. This is, if it doesn't work, we're probably not going to be around the next day. And, you know, we was like, okay, well, they're giving us the travel strike situation. So the team at the time were amazing. What they did, they literally just picked up the phone to every delegate and just said, look, let me show you an alternative way in. You can get the Thames Clipper. You can get a taxi. You know, there's a bus going at this point. And we literally mapped out how you get to the venue for every single person, to the point we was actually connecting people to do taxi shares as well, because it's just like, we just need to get them on this boat. And we ended up with 195 people at 200. Very, very proud of that moment. The team did incredible, and it allowed us to then kick on to next year. Next year, we go to Borough Market. So Borough Market was a massive step for us. It's an outdoors venue, so we were outdoors for the first time. We had an awful experience there in the morning. So we arrived at about 6 o'clock. And I don't know if you know Borough Market, but it's a very the backside of Borough Market where we were supposed to be is a fish market generally. And because we were there, the fish traders were getting kicked out. And they were not happy that they were getting kicked out for the day. So there we are about to set up, and they all grabbed their bins of fish guts and fish heads and just basically threw the water where we were supposed to be having the conference. So then we've got fish guts everywhere, fish everywhere. The sun's coming out. The stink is starting to go up. I mean, you know, it's one thing we've got 2 hours. What do we do here? So we end up sending some of the team down to a B&Q. We got buckets and bleach and mops. And we're there just on our hands and knees scrubbing this floor up to about 20 minutes before people come in. And that's the sort of stuff people don't see with events. They think, you know, they turn up and they say, oh, it's great. And it looks really nice and easy. And it's lovely. But actually, it's that sort of stuff that goes behind it. So, yeah, had plenty of those moments in the past.
So, but it's kind of it continually kicks on to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And obviously, this year was at Nebworth and in Nashville, right? So, you know, was that always the plan that it was going to be that scale of event?
I think if I'm answering honestly, if you'd have asked me in year one, I would have been happy if we'd have got to maybe 400 or 500 people a year. That would have been great. What we started to see, and it wasn't the direction of travel we were going in, but pardon me, in 2017, people started attending with their teams, and we started to notice, okay, so there's 4 people from Tesco's as opposed to 2 people, which you usually get at a conference, and then there was 8, and then there were 10, and I think the first team of 10, I think, were probably, I think it was probably maybe Sainsbury's. And when you started to dig into it and say, well, why are you attending, you know, with so many people? And it's because this is our celebration. This is our day. This is a celebration talent acquisition. We're going to use this as an opportunity to get our team together, to do all our learning in one day, to meet all our vendors and connections in one day. And then we're going to go back to the office. We're going to sit down and map out what we're doing for the rest of the year. And we were like, well, if everyone's going that direction, let's lean into that. Let's go down that pathway. So we started to really promote Wreckfest. Yes, you can come individually and come as a pair and you'll have a great time. But you know what? If you want to bring 20 people from Amazon's recruitment team, there's a lot of benefit in it. And that's where the scale of Wreckfest has come. We were 5,000 people this year. We'll be 6,000 people next year in the UK. In the US, we're 1,000 people this year. First time there, we'll be 2,000 people next year. So the scale of Wreckfest, and here's the thing, you can do different. It's easy to do different. And Wreckfest is very different. Okay. It's easy to do normal, but it's also easy to do different. Doing different at scale is where the real hard work comes. And that's the bit which separates Wreckfest from everywhere else. Because you can hold an event on the side of a mountain if you want. Can you do it with 5,000 people? That's when it becomes a challenge.
Yeah. But I mean, the way that obviously, and you said the way you do it and the kind of the basis of it is looking at a music festival, right? And so that's what the template is. And that is what people can kind of expect, because it isn't just around the great guests and the kind of the learning and the interaction with everybody. There's a fun fair, and there's music and things like that. There's something else all to it, right? Which, you know, isn't the reason why people are going. It's enhancing the reason why people stay, I'd guess, as well, and keep coming back. Which I think is the bit that does make it that little bit different.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think what we've always tried to achieve is, how do we take a business event, but do it in a style of something that people are more akin to doing on the weekend? How can we make it closer to what they would do with their mates as opposed to what they do with their work colleagues? Because if you can do that, you can blend the two, you create a certain level of stickiness for people to come back, but you also create an emotional connection with people that most conferences will never be able to, because you're more aligned. You're hitting a part of the brain that tells people it's more aligned to what they're doing in their personal life. And that creates that reason for coming back. I think we looked at 2022, 2023, 86% of companies that acquire tickets acquire tickets again. So it's the first one in the diary, and it's the first one people come back to. And what I always love, and the simplest way to explain it to people, and this is what I love. If you look on LinkedIn, when someone's leaving a business and someone posts a picture of them and says, oh, Johnny, you know, shame to let you go, but thanks for the great times. 90% of the time, that picture's from Wreckfest. Right, you know, the picture they're using, because it's not sitting in the office, it's not at the Excel center, it's the connection part, and that's what I love.
Yeah. So, as I said, one of the things again that's different about is the music, right? And you've had some pretty big bands you're going to kind of play. Obviously, I think it was Basement Jacks, was it not this year?
Basement Jacks this year, yeah.
You know, how do you kind of, I mean, how do you go about getting Basement Jacks or these other big bands? You know, I mean, how do you sell that? You know, you go to their kind of their PR team. It's like, we got this recruitment event we want you to play at.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you want to come to a HR thing and play? No, not really. It's an interesting one because you have to, first of all, you've got to find someone that can appeal to sort of multi-generations. And that's the hardest part. You know, there's stuff that people want that, oh, that's great, but, you know, no one my age has ever heard of that. And there's stuff, you know, I want and I get told by people on my team, no one knows who that is sort of thing. So you've got to kind of find someone where if the music goes on, even the people that don't know them go, oh, yeah, I know that tune, right? So there's that. Finding people that are available is a huge thing. So we work with a lot of talent agencies. And now they come to us, to be fair, because we've been doing it so many years. Around about January time, we just start getting emails saying, hey, this person's available. Does it fit into the budget? Obviously, that's a big thing as well. And is it going to enhance the event? Does it tie into the feeling of the event as well? And I think Basement Jacks did a great example of that last year. The tent was packed. Everyone's dancing. But that, you know, that part of the day is the release. And it's more than just the music, right? That's the people go and they're listening to content all day and they're speaking to our suppliers and they're demoing products. And then they just get that bit at the end of the day where it's right. Now we get to let loose a little bit. And that's exactly what that part of the day's for. And again, like you said, it's a big part of why people come back because it isn't like every other event in our space.
Yeah. So here's a question. I don't know, you might be kind of spoiling next year, but is there a band or an artist that you want on, you'd love to have there, assuming they're multi-generational?
there's loads I'd love. Afford is probably a different thing, you know.
Well, yeah, okay.
You know, I heard Beyonce got paid $23 million to play in Dubai recently for an hour. So that might be slightly out of our wheelhouse. No, we've got a few people lined up. We haven't announced anyone yet, so I'm going to keep that one quiet. The guest speaker we have just signed will be announced in January. I'm really excited. So we usually have like a famous music act, but then also a famous speaker as well. I'm really excited about this one, but more on that in January. But there's loads of people we'd like. It's always about availability. Sometimes people just crop up. You go, actually, you know what? That would be pretty cool. We should look into it.
Yeah. And let's talk a little bit about kind of next year. Obviously, it's back to Nebworth again and Nashville again as well.
Yes.
And so where is potentially after that? Where's kind of where would you like to kind of go off there?
So I think, you know, we follow a fairly easy structure. So if you look at where we're building the RO100 right now, which is the Middle East, that would be a softer landing for us than landing breakfast in a country where we have no community. So that gives you a potential indicator of future plans. Dubai for breakfast could be a lot of fun. I know that there's a big demand out there from the leadership audience. In fact, I've got a call with them on Wednesday this week because they're very keen to get breakfast moving out there. So potentially as the next one, yeah.
Okay. And anything else you can kind of, you would like to have in the future of Wreckfest, apart from maybe one in the Middle East or Dubai? What else can you see kind of, what does your crystal ball tell you that you'd like?
I just think a Wreckfest is accessible to all. I think that's a real key thing for me. In the past, I've been quite, I've been in the mindset of, well, you know, people can travel, but you know, a lot of people still can't travel and a lot of people have restrictions from their businesses. So we need to make Wreckfest accessible. So in the US, you know, we have Nashville. Does it mean we won't do something on the West Coast? Doesn't mean we won't do that. You know, we might potentially look at that in the future, not this year, not next year, but maybe in the future after that. There's different places around Europe we could definitely look at. Australia is a huge market, but that's probably further down the line if we're being honest, just because of the time differences and everything else. We just want Wreckfest to be accessible. We believe that every TA person should be able to access a Wreckfest event because it's their day, it's their celebration. You know, it gives them that lift, it's that energy boost of why they're in the market and why they do what they do. So yeah, we want to just make that as accessible as possible.
And before I let you go, it would be good to have just a kind of a little chat around the kind of general state from your perspective of recruitment events in general, right? You know, obviously, sure. You know, taking Wreckfest into account, you know, where do you feel that people are, you know, you don't have to kind of name names, but is there anything we could, the generally the events kind of around our space could be doing better, should be doing better, you know, something we can maybe, or you've learned that you could kind of offer as advice? I don't know, but you know, there's a lot of events out there, and some are great, some are not so great. So you know, what does your crystal ball tell you around that?
I think if I look at events at the moment in our space, in HR space, the recruitment consultancy space, if people are doing what they did pre-pandemic, then you'll probably find they're on the naughty list this year in terms of, you know, who's gonna survive and who's not. Just because I think the world has changed. And you know, I've said to people before, we used to just try and get people out of the office. We're now trying to get them out of their houses. That's a lot more difficult. You have to create more of an experience for people. You have to offer more than just content. Content can be found on YouTube. It's amazing. You can open up TED Talks and you've got some amazing content on there. You need to offer more than that. There is an element of the pandemic taught us that there is no replacement for human interaction. And, you know, we tried to do online events and we tried to do online networking on, you know, during the pandemic, and it's fine for content, but it's that human interaction cannot be replaced online as it can be in person. So I think there's that part, there's the experiential part. You have to offer more, not falling down the trap but being too vendor heavy as well. Look, we know the market is tough right now, and look, we know that, you know, recruit market's tough, and that generally has a knock-on effect to how much people are spending at events. So there is a temptation from some organizers to go very vendor heavy with content and with, you know, their ratio of delegate to vendor. Like, be careful, because that can really kill your event very fast.
And I think we've all been to events like that. Jamie, it's been an absolute pleasure. It's been great to kind of hear you talk and give us a little bit of history behind Recfest. Good luck for next year. I'm sure we'll catch up again soon. I might even come to Recfest. You never know. I'd love to. But for now, thank you very much.
Brilliant. James, thank you very much.
Thanks for listening. And don't forget, you can subscribe to the Marketing Rules podcast on Apple, Spotify, and all other major podcasting platforms. I've been your host, James Whitelock, and I hope you can join me and more amazing guests next time. The Marketing Rules podcast is a Thinking Circles production.